So now we're in Bahunar. I'd said that I'd been through Borgay in Bahunar. I'd gone to their office, which was in a very modern building across from Dinosaur Ali, just below the American Embassy in Roosevelt. And got to know each other, but we never talked politics up to that point. Then Mohana comes on the scene. And sometimes on Friday
night... This is still 1968?
Maybe 69 now. Probably we're into 69. I don't remember. Maybe 69. Mohana and Wally used to go there with some sandwich shop on the old Shamron Road. It was really rather a cruddy place. But I think Mohana either owned it or owned the building. He owned lots of buildings all over Tehran. Right?
Right.
And so, for some reason, their idea, rather than going someplace nice, was to go to this cruddy sandwich shop. There was usually nobody else in there. We'd, sometimes on Sunday nights, we had nothing doing. Wally and Mohana would go there every Sunday night and park that historic car in front and so forth. Anyway, so one night he said, well, look, I do anything next Thursday night. And Mohana said, and I said, no. He said, well, I want to take you to a place that's, you know, be very instructive to you. You'll learn new things about Iran and so forth and so on. So it was all very strange. So I said, sure. So they picked me up in this Mohanaubil, this strange car, as I said, 1930 maybe Packard, which was like, you know, everything was polished and it was like brand new and nobody dared touch this car. And so we drove off to Old Shamron Road, a little above the sandwich shop, to Hosseinier Shah. So because somehow Mohana was a big wig in Hosseinier Shah. I don't know if he had contributed to it or what, but he had real party there. And when you go in there with him, you know, they'd all... I remember the night we were there, the late Martyr Motahari, who I'd seen around Tehran University, was there. And he was very, you know, how should I say? We talked to Motahari and so forth. Shariati wasn't there. Talked to Motahari, and I was introduced to Motahari, and we went and sat more or less by Motahari. There I was, the Farangi, and with old Oy Mohana, with old Oy Wali.
You were introduced to them as an American...
just Oy Royce, yeah, not even that, Oy Royce. Introduced them all. So we sit there. I'm going to say, no, they have a special speaker tonight. This point was terribly political about it. They were big in all this crap about Islam and science and, you know, so forth, and their speaker. And so the speaker comes in, and who is the speaker but Oy Mohana? And he sees me with Motahari and so forth. And they are sitting next to Motahari, you know. And, you know, almost fainted. But he went ahead with his thing. Okay, now, it wasn't political law. But, you know, how these things are. If you go with somebody and then you sit next to Motahari and Hosseinier Shah, then people who wouldn't have talked to you, you know, totally innocently, not even really knowing what Hosseinier Shah was, then once you do that, people who wouldn't talk to you before talk to you. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now
let me bring this up.
Yeah.
Although they were not speaking in their lectures or in their conversations with you about politics,
no.
Did you have any feelings at all that what their attitude was vis-a-vis the regime? Did you sense anything?
Not until after that night.
Mm-hmm.
They're very smooth. After that night, everything came out. That night
what
sort
happened?
Of was my initiation by fire. Well. At the same time, Ganji, our buddy Ganji, was head of the law faculty. And Parviz was something other. Was he a dean or
What year was this?
This is 69 or 70. Paris was something like, anyway, Paris was trying to upgrade the English language, English writing skills. And talked to somebody at the American Embassy, and she suggested...
For the record, you're talking about Pavisoni.
Yeah, Pavisoni. And so suggested that I might be interested, because I had a grant, but I needed more money. So two or three times a week, I would give an English composition class at the law faculty.
In Tehran University?
Yeah. And when I came back, you know, the week after Hosseini Ershad, I realized that a lot of my students had been at Hosseini Ershad. And they were very perplexed that, you know, I had been there. I was sitting next to Motahari with these two, you know, rather quaint-looking Foucaultese with 1930 clothes and little beards. And Vali was sort of the same style as Mr. Mohana. And so then these people would start talking to me. Then Bahunar started talking to me.
Privately?
Yeah. And also, but at that point, Borghei was, the impression I always got, that Borghei was more at this point the brains behind this whole bunch. And they really weren't talking then. And this is very early. They didn't talk about Khomeini. What they talked about is that the Shah's regime was so secular that a lot of things they wanted to do, they weren't allowed to do. And they had this funny idea that Americans could somehow bring pressure on the Shah to get him to do what they wanted to do.
This is the view expressed by people like Bahunar
and Borghei. And what they wanted to do, at that point, was to set up a secular university, an Islamic university, segregated male and female, with sort of a real university, a private university. And they had a lot of money. They could have done this. But they had to get a permit. And the Islamic, Shah's regime, Shah's government, would not permit them to do this. And I think it was a big mistake. And I've always had this sense that when they couldn't do this, it was one of the things that got them more and more radical. I think if the previous regime had gone a little more with these people in legitimate things they were trying to do rather than prevent them from doing it, they might not have alienated them so much. The feeling I got, despite Punzai Khordad and all this, is this people weren't that alienated from the regime, but they couldn't understand quite why the Shah's regime wouldn't let them do anything the way they wanted to do it. Now, one of the ways they tried to infiltrate...
What was it? What other things they wanted to do?
This is the bit... The only thing I remember is this Islamic University was a big, big thing.
In Tehran?
Yeah, and they had the money. And for all I know, old Mohana was one of their supporters. They were somehow very involved with these people. Very. Mm-hmm. I told them, I didn't know anything. That was one story. So, Jim Bill had kept telling me, but, you know, he hadn't got to know any mullahs, and he wanted to know mullahs. Well, this Oy Borghei, Mahonar didn't have any money and had a rather, cruddy apartment and so forth. But anyway...
Did you go to Mahonar's apartment?
Sure. And I even went to Kerman on a trip and stayed with his cousin, who Iran Manesh, who was a mullah, who was in Dabiri in Kerman, and stayed in his house and so forth. So, but anyway, I knew these people very well. They were nice people. But, so anyway, so I arranged one Friday for Jim and his wife, that time he only had, he only had his son, Timmy. And we went up, this guy, a Borgay, had a bog in Shamron near Alap. And so we went there, and the old Borgay went and talked to Jim Bill, because even then, everybody thought Jim Bill had the ear of everybody and so on. And, you know, Jim Bill thought they'd talk
about... But this was not the impression that they had of you.
No, I'm different. And so, I was different anyway. So then, what happened? I think Jim thought they'd talk about Khomeini and about Tanzai Khuda. All they wanted to talk about is why can't we have our Islamic university? Yeah.
And that was their only, at that time, discussion about the Western values or women's freedoms or...
No discussion, except they were very proud that they kept trying to explain to Jim. I remember that this house that Borgay had was a Adroni Biruni house. So they sent Ann, Bill, and the baby boy into the women's side. But I remember he saying to Ann and Jim that, you know, while our lifestyle is different, you know, my wife and my daughters and all these, you know, have gone to university, are educated, and so forth and so on. Okay? So, that's the Islami phase.
You kept your contact with these people?
I kept my contacts when I come back to Tehran through Mr. Vali, this funny guy.
No, from 68
until... 72 when I left Iran. Then I lost contact with them until November 1979. And if you remember, in November 1979, they took the hostages. Mm-hmm. I was in Arizona teaching at the University of Arizona, and Jim Bill called me, and he said that, you know, he was trying to do something to come to Washington, talk to people, try to do something about the hostage thing, and I'm trying to get to Iran, and go with him or work with him and so forth and so on. And I said, well, I think this is an awful thing, and if I can do anything, I'd be glad to help. And then he said, well, what I want you to do is to, he was already in contact with our buddy Mansour Farhang, who was then the Iran Jamhuri Islamic to Washington, and said, do you mind if I ask Mansour Farhang to contact Bahonar and to see if you're coming with me? They get us visas and so forth to go. And so I said, okay, yes, I don't mind. So I came to work, because I knew several of the guys who were hostages. So I came to Washington from Arizona with a suitcase, and we went to the embassy, and sure enough, we got our visas right away. And but then things got all messed up, because Mansour Farhang got Ramsey Clark and Andrew Young and all these people involved. So in the end, and then Carter didn't want us. We sort of worked in the State Department on this, but through Henry Precht, who was the desk officer. But then apparently Carter didn't want us to go, so we didn't go, and I don't know, that didn't happen. But that was my last contact indirectly with Bahonar, and then of course he got blown up.
Going back to 1968-69, while you were teaching course in Tehran University, what else did you do at that time?
I'm doing my research.
Your research?
I'm taking some courses at Tehran University. I did that for 2 years.
And then you were staying in Tehran
for 2 years? In the 70s, I more or less finished my research, but I wasn't satisfied that I knew enough about Iran and Farsi. and my grant ran out, and this job of executive director of the American Sign in Shiraz opened up, so I took that for 2 years, and I did that and continued in some writing up in my research and for my thesis, but so I lived 2 years in Shiraz. But getting back to Tehran University, another place, at Tehran University in the law faculty, I ran into a whole bunch of people who had been in my conversation sessions in the Iran Merit Society. And a lot of these I'm still in contact with. They keep coming into my life.
Mm-hmm.
One was a diplomat with the Islamic Republic and the foreign ministry, and he no longer is, he quit. He had a foreign assignment, and he just called me a couple days ago. Several of the guys, they were all very anti-regime, by the way. National Front types, they were very moderate, but anti-regime. They didn't like the regime, they really didn't quite know what they wanted, so they called themselves National Front. That was sort of enough. But three or four of these guys were young, relatively, when the revolution came in, they were probably the early 30s, and were involved with Lahiji and all this human rights law, and, you know, etc. And two or three of them, one guy is still a lawyer in Iran, and most of the rest of them are outside. It's very funny, but I'm still in contact with the guys. Well, they're all, you know, not often, but when they need me or I need them, we're in touch. Then another group of people I met, very strange guy who, in the Fulbright, I met, had these receptions and so forth when we first got there. There was a very interesting guy, about my age, maybe a little older, who had been at the University of Chicago, who taught archaeology at the University of Tehran, who had been back a year or two, called Reza Mostofi. Did you ever run into him?
No.
He's still now, and is sort of stuck with the Islamics, but he told me that he had a friend. He thought I'd be interested to meet him. I met his friend. This friend was a guy who wasn't terribly educated or anything, never been abroad, but he worked in the Ministry of Farhang with Hunan. And it was through him that I met, what's his name? Genghis Pahlavan. And then this guy, about 69, set up a very interesting sort of bi-monthly sort of intellectual discussion group, the Dure for Sham, where we used to meet in the Bashai Bank in Mali, which is something that bothers them.
Mm-hmm.
And Ashraf was there, and Majid Tehranian, Kayvan was there until he went back, in that group, Tamami, who you know, right, mm-hmm. from New York. Tamami was in that. In fact, I think one of the interesting things, I think, was Tamami at your wedding, or was it Bijan or Bahman, or there was some Hikmat wedding that this Tamami went to in Tehran. It wasn't yours. Okay, it was one of the others.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Bijan?
Bijan Hikmat?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't in Tehran.
This was some Tehran. Anyway. So, he was in there, Changiz was in this group, it was a very interesting group, and they were all very, all working for the government, but all with anti-government backgrounds. And Hossein Nafisi was there, a few other people. So anyway, this is a sort of, you know, I don't know if you've learned anything, if any of this is interesting, but
of course.
At least it's a variety.
Mm-hmm.
One, I was lucky that I always try, in knowing people, to get you know, a wide range of...
I was just saying, in your experience as the director of the
Young American Society,
would you tell us something about what you did in there?
Do you want to do that another night?
Sure.
That's a long, long story.
All right.
That's a whole different thing.
All right.
I'll tell you one more Mueller story.
All right, sure, go ahead.
When I did this study group, or not, you know, the conversation group, my one student called Hussein Ali Bahar Luluma Taba Tabai, and he was from Borja. And he said, and I really worked with him on his English, even sort of used to have my room. He was a very bright guy and so forth. He's still new. And he was from Borja. And I had this grant, I really didn't have much money and so forth, and Tehran was very hot in the summer. And he said, well, Borja is cool, and he went to Borja all summer. Why don't you come for 4 or 5 days to Borja? The bus doesn't, you can take the bus and it doesn't cost much, except if you leave at 6 in the morning, you can be in Borja by 5 in the afternoon. And, so he gave me this note, go to the Munvai at the, you know, Charaichi and give him this note and he'll take you to us. So I got to Borja and went to the Munvai, gave the Munvai guy a note. He gave us a very funny look. He said, are you sure this is where you want to go? And I said, yeah. And I went. He took me and went to this very old house with a Bornacher and a big, huge old house, and these big old houses in Shiraz, bang, bang. And, some old male servant came to the door and he knew who I was and said that so-and-so wasn't there, so they just took me into a room with no furniture and got me, and nobody came and nobody was there and so forth. And so the Ema turned out that this guy, I didn't know this, that this guy's father was a big mullah in Borja. And he was also like a cousin of Alay Borja Di and Alay Hakim and all this. And in the rooms were all the only photographs were all these mullahs all over. So I remember I had bought, because I one thing I could never get used to is aftabe, so I had two suitcases, and one suitcase had maybe 3 rolls of toilet paper in it. And I'll tell you why this is, came up, and I brought presents and stuff, and for his mother and so forth, I brought his sisters, I brought, you know, Pond's hand cream and so forth, it was the usual stuff. And so, anyway, I learned that he was a mullah, my father was a mullah, which I didn't know, and they had a, you know, 2 courtyard, the men and women were separated, so didn't see any women. And they had it was a huge house, and they had a huge courtyard with a pool, with one of these big platforms in the pool, and we, the men, would all sleep, except for the father who'd go in with the women. We, brothers and cousins and stuff, we'd all sleep on this platform in the middle of the pool. And I remember that the first morning, must have been very early, I heard all this hee-hee-hee, and I didn't open my eyes, but you know, the mothers and the sisters and all these had all come to look at the strange foreigner. And then they all disappeared, and I got up and acted as if I hadn't known what was going on. And the day I was leaving Borja, they all the women came to say goodbye, and they said, aha, we've seen you, you haven't seen us. And I said, aha, that's what you think, but it's not true. But again, on political things, like, a lot of these people who've been my students, who then became very political, I didn't know. For example, in Borja, not a student, but a friend of this Baral Alum, Tabatabai, a friend of mine, was a guy called Hadi Ghat, who was a very good violinist, who used to go to bogs and so forth and play violin and so forth. And Alayla, this guy had been very involved in Fedor and Michal and was executed by the mullahs. then another guy, one of my students from 62, was a guy called, very ironically, was a guy called Abbas Bachordar, who was from Yaz, whose father's some multimillionaire, who's one of these characters who went to this New York feast.
Haji Bachordar.
Yeah. But Abbas was also Fedayi, and he was executed in revolution. They never figured out how father and son have been executed. They really want money in these creeps. Everything Mohteshami and Ahmad Khomeini says about these guys, in my opinion, and I hope this is, you know, these Lajavadi type, all they want to make is a buck. You know, and I'm very cynical about all this. I think actually the mullahs are probably right on the mark. And then I got on that stuff. But anyway, I just want to tell you about two more people I thought of who later turned out to be political. I don't know how political they were at that time.
Okay.
On the Khomeini people in the Islamic Republic, a Tehran, the story from my Tehran days. Somebody I met who helped me along my Sufi research, who I met through Vali and Mohana, was a guy called Ali Kamali Sabzavari, who was a mullah, who was also sort of a Sufi and used to go around to all these groups and preach and do zikr and stuff. You ever heard of him, Kamali Sabzavari? Anyway, very well-known guy in certain circles. One birthday of the 12th Imam, he invited me to go with him on his rounds and all the various places he went. That was very interesting. But the point I want to make is that this must have been October of 69. I met him near Baharistan. And at that point, sort of near Sazman, by Baharistan, there was a level ground that was a parking lot. This is like about 7 in the morning, and it was a very young mullah ranting and raving, and all sorts of people were listening to him. And I said to Mr. Sabzavari, I can't believe, who is this guy, what's he saying? He said, well, an hour or so this guy will be arrested, but he's come from Iraq, and he's one of the, Khomeini disciples. And he's talking about Khomeini and Islamic government and so forth. And I said,
this is in what year?
This is 69, probably. And I feel like, Khomeini, well, you know, let's face it, the Shah's regime isn't so hard. He said, no, it's awful. I said, well, do you think this is a violent opportunity? You know, if these guys get into power, I'll immigrate to America, he said. I'm scared to death of them. But he died before the revolution. But anyway, that's the story for tonight, huh? And we'll do Shiraz. I mean, Shiraz is another big chunk.
Okay. Thank you.